again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
The mailbox is full and cannot accept any messages at this time. Goodbye.
Greetings, the automatically deleted husband, and, you know, it's definitely growing on me, this problem. I did send a postcard today to George, because I mentioned that, you know, I do my hikes, you know, now the farmer's market is open again, that I take the... it's the 4 mile round trip. I do it at least 3 times a week. I just wondered about asking him, you know, I want to do one of those. It's far more modest. And, you know, because I don't know. You know, I know about Susanna. I heard about her being somehow involved with basketball. I sent her the medal about, you know, her dad entering the 5K race. And, you know, I know nothing. And, yes, it's getting to me. Yeah, you know, only took 11 years. I want to leave you, three videos that I thought, were interesting because I've gotten in the habit at nighttime, pardon me, to watch a few things in order to, ease the mind before I go to sleep to kind of distract me. So I spend, you know, a half hour or so watching something, typically a news item or things, something of that nature. But last night I watched a thing called Inland Visions. It's a series done by RT. It's the guy who does it. I don't know if he's British, American, whatever. But, you know, because there's a whole bunch of people who are British and American that work for RT. But he's done some interesting things, and these are more the fluff things. And he went talked about the Russian ballet, you know, because obviously you know the ballet there is a lot bigger deal than really I think it has been domestically in the formal sense. They call it the classical ballet. But it's quite there in other countries, and notably, like, for example, South Korea. But the what I caught in that interview, you know, besides being interesting, is the one gentleman was asked, is it something that's natural that somebody has? You just train them and they can become good at ballet. And the guy said, no. It is, you know, you have to have the physical characteristics, and there's some kind of innate talent that you cannot really define. And they have to come together in order to form somebody who's really good at this. And he pointed out that you can't, which you see in a young child when they hit puberty, everything changes. So they may be okay at one age, they post-puberty, it's either better or worse, you know. So he says, hard to tell. So, you know, I thought, well, it's someone who's obviously been involved and observed these things. But the follow-up question was, what do you see about, you know, the newer next generation? And he says it's going downhill, fundamentally because of cell phones. Because people are constantly looking at their screen as opposed to being actively doing something. And I thought that was insightful. You know, so here is something that's completely off in a different tangent, you know, ballet. and he hit that cultural reference of how the cell phone is destroying his field, his passion, because it changes the characteristics of people. You know, I've seen where apparently the problem with, you know, like people with, you know, neck problems are having because they're constantly looking down. And, you know, people, because I have seen this, young people, you know, when I walk around occasionally, you see somebody young, and so often their head is buried into a phone. And I thought that was very insightful. There's another video that hits home even more. This again is RT. Kiev's desire to punish pro-Russian civilians is potential genocide. So the bulk of the thing was talking to a gentleman from Greece, but in the beginning they showed a Ukrainian gentleman talking about the need for them, and I wanted to find where this is, and I found the guy's got does stuff on YouTube and so forth. He was high up in second, third in command kind of thing within the Ukrainian government, a senior advisor, whatever it was. And but he's also an actor, just like Zelensky. So they put up the people skilled to put up the front are the ones that are, putting up the front. And he's continuing to do apparently a lot of videos. But since they're on YouTube, it has the auto translation. So I looked at one. I didn't bother too long. But the issue is his statement, that you see at the beginning of this, is we need to go when we regain places. Of course, there is this optimism that Ukraine's going to win the war. It says when we regain things, we'll go into the communities and find the people who were Russian sympathizers or had any. And the light duty thing he said is like 10 years you can't vote, stuff like that, to the point of you will be executed, depending upon to what degree. And the other thing is, you're guilty until proven innocent. These are things he said. So that part of the conversation, I think, should, it's part of, again, the Ukrainian people is different than the leadership. The leadership has been placed in, just like the leadership's placed in the United States. It wasn't simply because, everybody wanted Biden. No, or Trump or Obama, whatnot. No, they're placed because of marketing techniques and so forth. Again, democracy and freedom are opposites. Keep that in mind. But listening to this person, it's reminiscent because about a year ago, I haven't put on Kozlowski.org yet, but there was the one gentleman, a TV presenter in Kiev. Ukrainian state sponsored or one of the legitimate because they shut down all the competition. He went and said, allow me to quote Adolf Eichmann, the German Nazi era, is that we need to go and not only kill our enemies but their children, because otherwise their children will come back to kill us. That's the attitude. That's the attitude that you're dealing with the sadistic leadership, because there is a whole bunch of that sadistic leadership within Ukraine. Apparently I'm seeing suggestions that there's a little bit more acknowledgement of the Nazi influence. Apparently, like even the BBC is saying, I guess there's a, because they used to say that if you go back, 5 years ago, they would say there's a lot of Nazi influence in there. And I think, if I recall correctly, the gentleman interviewed, the guy who was talking about getting revenge, I think if I recall correctly, he said the war started 9 years ago, which is in a fascinating acknowledgement. But, the issue there is, when I heard about that, what comes to mind for me, again, it's the whistleblower idea. Because if you are in a community, a war zone, and you're on one side or the other, and when you're not on the side where your community is, you could have a problem. And this is part of the objective. Obviously, for the, quote, spy, who it's going to work for them. But also for the person who says, people have come in to destroy my culture or whatever, and I'm trying to protect myself, protect people like me. So it works either size in either direction. And I think the important aspect is to give the power to the individual, not collectivize it to a state, one side or the other. The big point in my mind is, you know, this is the old expression, power to the people. Well, in a very serious sense, I mean that. But the other thing was, so I'm sitting there having my lunch, and I saw that, you know, this J.P. Sears had put out a video, and I thought, okay, I got to watch this one. You know, title in there, "You're a Christian. Coming out as a Christian to your liberal parents." And what he did was fair. It's not one of his best, but it was fair. But I thought at least it may be a conversation thing. Because there were some weaknesses in some of the things I said. But, you know, that's not the point. You know, especially for someone who is into the theology, looking at that, especially looking at somebody who's, well, I think I want to step into this Christianity stuff, they don't have to have, you know, the depth of theology. So in that sense, you know, I don't want to be overly critical. So I would say it was kind of weak, but at least it was done. And that I find important. Because, you know, that premise, you know, what he points to is the double standard, which I think is highly accurate. I think he used the expression, because I've seen protesters, and, you know, we're it's like intolerant of the non-tolerant or whatever, which is, you know, it's like there's no absolute truth. That's the absolute truth. that's a logical fallacy. You cannot have an absolute truth that there is no absolute truth, because then you have an absolute truth, which makes your premise wrong. So, you know. This idea of tolerance, we want tolerance for us, but not for you. That's one of the things he did express in there. And I think that's an important thing, because it goes back to, again, it's the group, the collective. Again, you're part of your collective, and you got to be lockstep with your collective. And your collective can make noise and talk about how superior it is and things of that nature and rah, rah, whatever. But don't violate the collective. And, you know, what we see happening, you know, obviously the dominant thing right now that's making most of the news is the homosexual or the, you know, the LGBTQ plus SIN stuff. And that's an issue, but they're typically intolerant of those who say, all right, we want our way, you can have yours, except if your ways conflicts with ours. I mean, that's basically what it is. But I do think it's important to, you know, the idea with, you know, as the Bible states, you know, what do we have to do with judging those outside? It's those inside we are to judge. And that is an important idea. Is that 1 Corinthians 5? Yes. Oh, for what do I have to do with judging outsiders? It's not those inside the church who you are to judge. Of course, you know, ESV uses church because it is. The words are actually. Let's see, the LSV. What do I have to do to judging those outside? Do you not judge those within? Because it's not, there's no church, ecclesia, assembly, or anything of that nature in there. It is the inside and out. And you know, it's important, I think. So I would suggest, when the crowds are saying, oh, be tolerant of us LGBTQ plus SIN, but we can't be tolerant of you who say, you know, one man, one woman, you know, marriage begins with sex, ends with death. Don't ever, can't say that. No, because you're intolerant. The issue is called, as a follower of Christ, to proclaim but not impose. So I would suggest to go to the homosexual community, for example, and try to condemn them, to try to regulate them and so forth, I think is we're uncalled for. To proclaim to them, I'm sorry, what you're doing is sin. You know, the arsenicoite, you know, men betting other men. This is not a good idea. But we can proclaim this, but no imposition of it. And in doing so, one, you're less of a threat to them in the sense of you're not trying to hold up signs, protest, those kind of things. So when they go protest, you ignore them, especially when they say, oh, we want them in public schools. So what? What does a Christian community do? Why are they involved in the public school system? If you're involved in the public school system, you're giving the state power. Don't give the state power. But, you know, the proclamation is important. And I don't think it's the confrontational stuff. So that alone will remove a lot of the tension. But they will come after you somehow, which I would suggest goes back to the thing I mentioned about this gentleman in Kiev who said, we're seeking revenge with the Russian collaborators. We're going to go after them. And so you'll see that effectively with the LGBTQ plus SIN group and other things. They'll come after you. So what do you do? Do you seek the state protection? No, because it's the state that's coming after you. You trust the Lord. And I really think that's a fundamental point. You trust the Lord. You don't go after them. You don't collectivize. You don't fight against them. You trust the Lord. It's something I have to keep reminding myself of too. Anyway, I am really concerned. I did email the state in reference to, because they sent me the document about sign here because Glory Jane is now apparently a high school graduate, therefore she's off the list. I sent the email, no response. The previous email sent, no response. Why? What has happened? Because I sent it to multiple addresses. It used to be one of the addresses I would send it to, there was a virtually immediate, you know, acknowledgement within an hour or two saying, yes, we've got this. I've had none of that. So what's happened? That I don't know. I think I'm going to wait till maybe Friday, Saturday, whatever, and email them saying, because I did ask, is there somebody else supposed to contact? Silence. You know, again, these are, when you're dealing with the state's not your friend. So right now, I don't see them pushing me, and you know, because obviously I went to them because they came after me. This was the, you know, appeal to Caesar kind of, or the, you know, from Acts, kind of, as I mentioned. But the, you know, if they leave me alone, that's fine. But the issue is, it's on the table, and they could suddenly show up, which is what happened before. So I'm trying to preempt that now because obviously there has been interaction. But anyway, and of course, you know, the fundamental aspect that I put, you know, I said that in basically the first issue, if you want me to pay now for Walter and Zadok, prove they're alive. Because I have no evidence my youngest two sons or any of my kids are alive. Julia did email me a while back, but that's all I've heard. And of course, she became silent too. So if you're going to come after me for paying for my kids, prove they're alive. It's the habeas corpus thing. And it's interesting that it's never been addressed. Anyway. I am concerned that it's, I guess, 3 weeks now. And I don't know what's going on. You know, 33 years ago, well, it was basically 34 years ago, my heart was completely enveloped by this young lady. At the time, she was a teenager. She had my heart. And as I point out, 1 Corinthians 13:8, love never ends, never falls off. My love for her is not unchanged. It's only grown. And, you know, all I have now are, you know, the pictures on the wall, the pictures over here, and so forth. I heard a voice once for the first time in years on the phone call with the, you know, the court appearance, the telephone court appearance back in January, February, whatever it was. It's the only time I've heard her voice in years. And I love that lady. Clearly, there's no love in return. So, which brings to mind, again, the question, if love never ends, did she ever love me? I mean, it's a rational question. Love me in the way the Lord defines. My lady, I love you the way the Lord defines, irrespective of you, irrespective of the ripping my heart out, putting salt in it, and then sticking it, tossing it into the gutter that you've done. I love you with all my heart, unwaveringly. I will not turn from you. My lady, my wife, I love you and I want you back.